Welcome to minute 15 of season 10 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off this week is Derek McDuff of the Underrated Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Derek.
Thank you. Here we are at the end of the week, and I'm excited to be talking about this.
We got a lot of stuff to talk about today.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about that.
It's going to be good stuff.
It's going to be very technical about trains, but we'll figure it out. All right, so minute 15 begins with Blue finishing his warning and ends with Brown making a joke. So yesterday, Green blabbed a little bit too much. Yeah. And basically, Blue tried to put Green in his place and said, well, why don't you tell Mr. Doyle all about yourself? And he goes, will you? And, you know, Green has a look on his face that he's... you know, he realizes that he made a little bit of a mistake here, and the last thing he wants to do is really piss off Mr. Blue. You know, when you're in this type of situation, you don't want to do that.
Right.
But what's great is right beforehand, you get Danny Doyle just gives a look to Mr. Blue that's just hilarious. He's like looking at him like, okay, you're the guy who knows what he's doing here.
Yes.
He just like gives a quick look over to him and stuff like that. And then they reach a point, and then Blue goes, all right, stop it around here. And we hear the brakes screeching. And then, you know, they're getting ready to continue everything they need to do here. And, you know, they once again give us a shot from the outside where we see the kids jumping on the thing. And they give us what looks like a split screen, which I love the way they do it. You know, you see these three guys crammed on the left-hand side of the screen into the cab, and you see the two boys jumping on the window hanging from the windowsill.
Yeah,
you know, on the right-hand side, and it's just like so perfectly set up. The shot between the two, it's the contrast, you know, the whole thing, and I really like it. And then Green says to him, all right, I'm taking your brake handle and the reverse key, Denny. You know, again, he's referring to him by name. You know, it's one of the things they always tell you is, you know, don't get too personal.
Right. Yeah. Don't get too attached.
That's right. And then Mr. Green sneezes. And he says, I want your cutting key also. And he goes, that's it. So you have any idea what these three things are? What is a brake handle? What's a reverse key? What's a cutting key?
Well, I'm going to guess the reverse key is the one that you will use to make the train go in reverse. But the other two, I'm a little more mystified by.
Right. Well, I'm mystified by the fact that you have to have a specific key in order to go into reverse. You know, that's the thing that shocks me more than any of the other things.
Right. You would think you just push back on the same lever, but in the opposite direction. But guess not. Right.
But that is what you would think. Okay, so the first thing you have is the brake handle.
Well, that I understand. That one makes sense too.
He's also saying I'm gonna take it from you. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that gets me here. Like, how are you taking that away? It's like, shouldn't it be connected?
You would think.
You know, that's what's very, very strange here about the whole thing. You know, so basically then so you have the reverse handle. So reverse handle it's the operating control for a railroad locomotive that is used to determine the direction of travel. The reverser usually has three positions: forward, reverse, and neutral. So you see it's all three. So like you said, it's a lever that you move back. So when the reverser is in the forward or reverse position, the train will move in the indicated direction when the throttle is opened. Removing the reverser handle from the control stand in the neutral position locks the throttle control. effectively disabling the locomotive. The reversal lever is sometimes referred to as a railroad key. So again, the idea is you can pull that out, and that's even more than a brake. That's like taking the key out. So what he wants is he's saying, give this to me, so then the train can't move. You're not gonna be able to do anything with the train.
Right. Yeah. That. Okay.
And again, I sense. Never knew what that means. You know, it's just a very strange thing. And then he asks for the cutting key. Okay. So a cutting key is it's used to access and control the train's electric systems or mechanical components, often related to starting the train or engaging specific functions. These keys are sometimes interchangeable with other types of keys that activate different parts of the train. Okay. In some electric trains, a key might be used to switch on the battery, check voltage, and then activate the pantograph and circuit breaker. So again, the idea is I'm taking this so you can't try to move the train at all. Okay, and then... Yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And then Blue gives Doyle some instructions. And he says to him, you're going to be hearing from Command Center in a minute or two. You won't answer. You will ignore their call. Is that clear, Mr. Doyle? Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. They can call all they want, too. I'm deaf. talking about all this train jargon, so I actually found a list of a whole bunch of different terms that are used in the train system. Let's see if you've heard of any of them. Do you know what a deadhead is?
I've seen Catch Me If You Can. So I'm assuming that it's a person who is it's like a another kind of co-pilot who just kind of is along for the ride and doesn't really drive the train, but is kind of there for observational purposes, I guess.
Not in this case. I mean, what they're talking here with a deadhead is a train that travels without passengers or freight.
Oh, well, then never mind.
Right. Do you know what a drag is?
No.
A slow moving freight train. Then the term hauling the mail is used for a fast passenger train or a train moving very quickly. A bogey.
Is that like a rogue train, you know, that is, unaccounted for, but like just kind of that you're not sure why they're there or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's the thing that you put on a train that, like, you pump on both sides, like they did in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, okay.
It says here it's a framework with wheels that supports a railroad vehicle.
Okay.
Right. Do you know what a frog is?
It's a little green guy that hops around.
Okay. And within the current train conversation?
That I do not know.
It's the part of a switch where rails intersect, allowing wheels to cross tracks.
Okay.
Okay, a tank car.
Are those the big ones that have like a lot of like, you know, the circle kind of ones?
Yeah, they're the ones that you're used to carry liquids.
Yeah.
Okay, what is the phrase bake a cake mean?
I have no clue.
It's where you're building up steam in a steam locomotion. Okay, a brass collar is a railroad official.
Okay.
Dog catcher is a crew sent to rescue a train crew that has run out of legal working hours, meaning that the railway, the motorman is only allowed to work X number of hours. So if he goes beyond that, mm-hmm. So they have to send another crew to switch them, and that they're known mm-hmm. as the dog catchers. Okay, in the hole.
Don't know.
A train waiting on a sidetrack for another train to pass.
Okay.
Okay, that's those are the ones that I found there.
Right, and, a lot of lingo.
Yeah, so Denny Doyle is complying. Yeah. And then Green gets out of the cab, and once again we see him move into the frame on the right hand side where the boys are jumping up on the window, which again is great. And then we see still through that, Mr. Blue is having the conversation with Denny Doyle. on the left hand side, on the right hand side, Mr. Green walking towards the end of the train car. And then he reaches the end, and Mr. Gray opens the door for him. And he goes, "Thanks, Mr. Gray." And he goes, "Don't mention it, Mr. Green, right?" And he goes, "Right."
Yeah, he's a little more like, this is another example of him not being one of these career criminals. He's a little more polite, you know?
Right. No, but Gray is basically saying, "Okay, my understanding of what he's saying here is that I'm sick and tired of, I'd rather we just use real names. I can't believe I have to try and remember that you're called Mr. Green and he's called Mr. Blue." Which again reminds me of Reservoir Dogs, where people are fighting
Right.
over the colors and things like that.
I don't want to be Mr. Pink,
Yes.
Steve Buscemi
So
famously,
I don't want to be
yes.
Mr. Pink. He goes, "You're Mr. Pink. You're Mr. White, and you're Mr. This." And he goes, "Well, why can't it be Mr. Black?" He goes, "'Cause you got another guy on another job called Mr. Black." goes, and then you had Tarantino go, "Well, like Mr. Brown sounds like Mr."
Yeah.
So yeah. And then Green reaches where Brown is with Bud, the conductor. And he turns to Bud and goes, "Let's have your cab key, conductor." So once again, another phrase that we didn't have before. What is a cab key?
I'm guessing it's the key to open up the cab that lets you, control
Yes,
this
it's the way
car.
to unlock the cab, enabling access to specific switches and controls needed to begin train operations. So again, just these lines show how much research went into making this novel and the movie, where this is detail that you don't really need to care. You don't Nobody knows this, and nobody cares. It's a given. You get in a train, the train moves. That's it. You think of I've always thought,
Yeah.
up until I was, I mean, even again, I've seen this movie so many times, but I've never paid attention to the words that they said there. And when you think about it, when I watch it now, and I'm caught off guard by them using these phrases, what it's telling me is that they know what they're doing here when they wrote this script. These are things that you need in order to quote unquote disable a train so that it can't go unless you want it to.
Yeah, and I do appreciate that, and obviously this is the 70s, so finding out this information was probably a little bit tougher than it would be today with a Google. But so they probably all like went and studied these guys on the trains and how to do it. And I always appreciate when there's that dedication to detail. Like, I'm not a train guy. I know that, but there are definitely a lot of people who are like very, very obsessed with trains, train guys, that's a real thing. And they will know if the detail's wrong. And I can, relate to other stuff that when I see something in a movie that is something that is my passion, like video games or like sports or something. And when they get video games in a movie and they get like there'll be somebody playing a game and they just throw out a bunch of jargon that makes them like, "I'm going to the next level," and you're just like, "What you said makes absolutely no sense. It drives me crazy." So I appreciate that they are really like, "No, we're going to make sure that we get all this right."
I like that too. Before I mentioned the idea of the brake system, where he told him that he that he wants him to give him the brake handle. So I glossed over that aspect of it. So a brake handle on a train is a control lever that the driver uses to apply the brakes, either to slow down or stop the train. It's a crucial safety device, and depending on the train type, may be used to control the train's air brakes or an independent brake for the train itself. So again, it goes back to what I was talking about before.
There you go.
These
Makes
are
sense.
very essential things, and it's amazing to think about the fact that every one of these things someone thought of years and years ago, and they're not even talking about a hijack. It's like, I
Yeah.
why didn't they just why didn't they just do it like a car? We have a key, you turn it on, and that's it. So it's interesting the way that this is all described as the story goes through. And then
Yeah, absolutely.
Bud says to him, I can't do that. I ain't supposed to do that." And then Mr. Brown looks at him and goes, "You got 3 seconds to live, conductor. One, two, okay. It'll mean my job." And then he hands him over the key. Now, do you think the fact that he says I'm gonna count to three, do you think that's a relation to the idea that this movie is called Pelham 123, or just a coincidence?
I think it's just a coincidence, to be honest.
Okay, I would tend to agree with that. And at this point, so Bud has gotten a little bit more curious as to what's going on, and he turns to Brown and he goes, "What's he gonna do?" He goes, "You wouldn't want me to spoil the surprises, would you?" So again, it's an attempt by Earl Hyman slash Mr. Brown, of Home Improvement fame, getting in a little bit of a joke there. So I again, I like the way that they pepper in that joke, even though it's what you would call a dad joke type of thing.
Right, it's a little, yeah, it's very, very on brand for the character.
But I think that's what they want, what they need.
Yeah.
That's
Absolutely. And I also love the moment right before that where Bud kind of, when he's like, oh, give him the key, and Bud kind of like glances back and forth between the two of them, and he looks at, he kind of keeps when he glances at Mr. Green, you kind of get the vibe of like he's like, oh, are you the nice one? Are you gonna get me out of this? And it's clear that that is not going to happen. But I it's a like nice little moment that he has where he's like, hey, you seem like a nice guy. Are you gonna help me? Let me just go. But nope, he's not.
Or maybe on the other hand, he looks at Mr. Green and goes, "Hey, wait a second, weren't you on the Canarsie run? Didn't we? Did we?" that was a When Harry Met Sally reference.
Oh,
Did
okay.
we?
Sorry, it's been
No,
a
it's okay.
hot
When
minute
you
since I've seen that.
when he meets her in the airport in St. Louis, and then he looks at her, and then they're on the plane talking to each other, and he turns to her and goes, "Did we?" And then he makes a motion with his hand, meaning did they hook up at some point? And she's like, "No, no." And that's the way this minute ends. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss about this minute or about the movie in general?
Yeah, no, I think, I like that we get a little bit of Bud here. Bud is just kind of this nice little yokel that is just kind of like, oh, well, I guess I gotta do he's good. But yeah, I just overall I'm really glad that I watched this movie. I think this is a really fantastic, just gritty. This is like pure gritty 70 movie, where it's not too long. It's just kind of here's the premise for the movie and just go and run with it. It's not, there's not that many bells and whistles. It's just, you get it. It's very character driven. We've got a couple important locations. There's a couple of like action sequences. Like there's the part where later on where the cop car is driving and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's all character drama. And I really love that. I'd be curious to watch the Tony Scott version because I bet, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but the Tony Scott version really amps up the action.
Oh, for sure, that's of the action, but again, the way that they change the story just doesn't work.
And because yeah, the story is really what's, quote unquote, no pun intended, driving this film, and the way that you have these, intersecting characters and how they relate to each other, especially, Matthau and Shaw. But then even within Shaw's crew, you have these four very distinct personalities. Then you have, of course, everyone on the train who are just credited basically at the end as just like
Their characters.
stereotypes.
That's right.
I think this is a fantastic film, one I'm glad that I finally got around to watching.
You're very welcome for forcing you to watch it. Even though you could have just watched the 5 minutes,
Yeah, I gotta go all in if I'm doing the movie.
Understandable. Completely understandable. All right, so every Friday we have a segment called Fun City Friday, where my guests will give their top five movies that are somehow set or related to New York.
Yeah, so this is interesting because, like as I said in a previous episode, I'm a West Coast guy. I'm not. I've never been to New York. I've never been really. Other than in an air, I was in JFK for a second, flying to a wedding, but that's about it. But yeah, so really, all of my knowledge of New York comes from movies and TV shows. So this will give you my impression of what I really know and think about the city. But for number five, because it's such a refrain of like, oh, New York is really a character in this movie. That's kind of like a common, refrain, to the point where this movie really makes a joke out of that. And that's a movie that is a little less known, but is underrated. And I actually covered it. It's They Came Together, Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler, and they have a whole big joke about, yeah, like New York is really a third character in this movie. But it's kind of making fun of that quintessential, you brought up When Harry Met Sally, that quintessential New York City rom-com. This is really a good, that's a really great take on it. And it's a David Wayne movie. So the same guy who did Wet Hot American Summer, it's that same just ridiculous over-the-top style of comedy. So highly recommend that to everybody wanted to put it on the list.
I think I've seen that.
Oh, okay. It's fantastic.
Okay, it's 2014. Yeah, I actually hated it.
Oh,
Yeah.
well,
I mean,
go and watch
I
it
do
for
love I
yourself and
do
let us know,
I
listeners.
do love I do love Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler. I just didn't I should probably go back and read my review of it just to refresh my memory as to what exactly that movie is about, because I don't remember anything about it. It's been quite a long time since I've seen it.
Well, I can get the David Wayne and Michael Showalter are very, polarizing, I feel like, when it comes to comedy. So, and I'm really on their wavelength, but if you're not, I could see why, though it would not work for you, but I love that movie.
Let me see when I saw this movie. Okay, I saw it in October 2014. Yeah, I just didn't find it funny at all. I'm
No,
reading
and
what I
like I said, it's a
wrote
very
about it.
specific kind of comedy.
But again, I like both of them. That's the problem.
Did you like Wet Hot American Summer?
It was okay.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
I gave that one a 6 out of 10.
Listeners of the show, watch it, write in, tell us who you agree with. I would love
Okay.
to get
Yeah, no, I
hear
think
that.
I when I saw it, one of the things that I felt was is that it would have worked more as like little sketches as opposed to a full movie.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I mean, Wayne is very much that kind of like style, I guess. That's, SNL absurdism almost.
Okay,
So I can see what
which
you're saying.
makes sense.
Yeah, but number four, and this is what I imagine New York City is actually just really like, is The Warriors. Obviously, this is a story about a New York City gang that has to make their way from one side of New York to the other. And because they're framed for essentially assassinating a gang leader, and all of the gangs in New York and all of the cops in New York are trying to stop them and kill them, and they are just fight. They're fighting like these ridiculous gangs that are like, some of them are like baseball players, and some of them are like
Oh, I love
roller
those
girls and stuff
guys.
like that.
I love the
Huh?
bombers.
Oh yeah. It's just so much just ridiculous. It's just, can you dig it? Like it's iconic. That's like, when I think of New York, just the street level New York, that's what I think of.
Okay.
Number three is a more recent film, and this film is not entirely set in New York, but a good chunk of it is, and it's kind of about immigrants to New York, and that would be Past Lives, Celine Song's film from I guess 2 years ago now. But yeah, it's one of my favorite romantic movies from the last decade. I love films like this where it's just, it's these three characters, and they're all just kind of like in this really interesting entanglement. And they originally, two of them are from Korea, and then one immigrates to Canada and eventually New York. And the big part of the movie is the other character coming and visiting her in New York, her and her husband, just, it's a really lovely film. It's a side of New York that I feel like you don't get to see in a lot of movies. And it just, it's a New York from a different perspective than you see in a lot of movies.
I like that movie a lot. I
All
like
right.
the fact that it's an unconventional rom-com.
Yeah, exactly. Number two, I'd say it's impossible for me to do a New York ranking without listing at least one superhero film, because there's so many superhero movies that are set in New York, and for me, the ultimate New York superhero is Captain America. You know, obviously he's from Queens. There's been a lot of great, or sorry, not Captain America, Spider-Man. Captain America's from the Bronx, but Spider-Man is from Queens, and there's been a lot of great Spider-Man films set in New York. But I think the quintessential one that is a real New York movie is that first Sam Raimi one from 2002, where he, you know, and that one is also a post 9/11 movie. Like obviously it was shot mostly pre 9/11, but there's some stuff about hey, we're from New York. You mess with one of us, you mess with all of them. They pepper that stuff in a little bit. It's got that kind of like. That you know that glimpse in time of New York right after 9/11 that only existed for a second, that there's some of that in there. You know, obviously you see a lot of New York skyline, Spider-Man swinging around and like being on the Empire State Building, and obviously you have the Daily Bugle is in real life a famous New York landmark. It's not actually the Daily Bugle. So there's a lot of good New York stuff in Spider-Man 1, I think.
Okay, excellent.
And then my number one is one of my favorite films of all time. It's a film that is definitely it's another ground level, mostly New York film, but it's just about these kind of people that live in New York, and that is The Apartment.
What did I knew that's
Absolutely.
where you were going with that. I don't know why.
Yeah, you had a feel.
I had a
Okay.
feeling that that's where you were going.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, obviously, like I love past lives, and so I love these kind of like messy love stories. And this one is just. It's just a classic, you know. Like it's so there's so much good in it, and it does feel what I really would imagine, not just New York, but New York of a certain time. This kind of idealized New York, but it's also it just like the movie itself and the romances itself. It's like on the surface it's one thing, but then underneath it's this whole other thing. And you know, you get these little tiki bars and like the small apartments, but then the big buildings they work in. So it gives you a wide swath of it, but also just being just one of my favorite movies ever
Okay,
made.
very, very good. I like your list. Very nice. Very well rounded.
Thank you.
All
Thank
right.
you. Try to give it a little
There you
variety, you
go.
know.
Why not? As I said earlier in the week, as long as you're being true to yourself and to the movies that you really love,
Oh, yeah.
that's perfect.
Yeah, all these are high recommends
Yeah,
from
of
me.
course. Of course. All right. So once again, we will play for the final time this week. Name that remake. So let's spin the
All right.
wheel and see what movie we get.
See how I
See if it's
do.
something that you've heard of.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how I'm going to describe this one. So the original movie came out in 1972, and the remake came out in 2007. Okay, a man and his wife go on their honeymoon, and he falls in love with someone else.
The Heartbreak Kid.
Yes.
All right. All right. Pretty good showing, I think. 4 out of 5 I got
Yeah.
on these remakes.
Very nice. Very nice. Nicely
Thank you.
done. Excellent. All right, so Derek, would you like for one final time this season to tell everyone where they can find Derek McDuff?
Yes. Go ahead and check out Underrated. Look up the Underrated Movie Podcast, however you are listening to this, to get about 170 episodes. In my backlog and new episodes every other Monday. Of course, I talk about underrated and underappreciated films on that podcast. I have great guests. I have a at this point the panel that I just did at Comic-Con will be up there. You can also check me out on a few other things by going and all the links to all of that is going to be at underratedmoviepodcast.com to links to my other podcasts, my Patreon, you know, social medias for the show, all that good stuff. Underrated Movie Podcast.
Excellent. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Derek, thank you very much for joining me once again. I hope not only that you enjoyed this week, but that you will have fond memories of being forced to watch a good movie this time instead of a bad
Right,
movie.
yes, it was a nice change from seeing a bad movie that I saw before that I did not like to a good movie I had never seen before. A much needed turnaround.
Okay, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. All right, I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, achoo.
Zootype.